Hello, welcome to the MESG Radio. Today we'll be discussing heat wave in Nigeria, understanding climate change and coping strategies. And we have with us our guest, Mr. Abbas Agbaji. He's the technical anchor at the Sustainability Policy Commission. And he also is a consultant for the Impact Press Consulting. And welcome, Mr. Agbaji.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Hesse. Good afternoon, dear listeners. It's a pleasure to join you today on NESG Radio. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming. So I guess we can just get right to it, because I think lots of us have been experiencing similar things lately regarding the heat in Nigeria. So what do you think are the main drivers behind the current heat wave in Nigeria?
Thank you for the question. It would be important to clarify some concept here before we delve into the main drivers of heat wave in Nigeria. It's important to state that heat waves are not a natural event. They are part of natural cycles of weather patterns, and therefore it is not something uncommon to experience heat wave. However, the current trend of heat waves globally, not even just in Nigeria, has been attributed to climate change, given the rarity of the persistence of the heat waves that is experienced across the globe. And of course, with more intense impact in certain parts of the world. So, for example, last year, July 2023, has been noted to be one of the hottest months, and some days regarded as hottest days in the history of the Earth. And this is because of the very high temperature that I experienced in different parts of the world, including China, Southwest countries, states in the U.S., as well as some European, countries. So when we bring it back to Nigeria, we will see that what is happening in Nigeria is not so different from what is happening in other parts of the world. And therefore, some of the things that are, can be said to be the drivers of heat wave in Nigeria is one, climate change. It's becoming clearer day by day that anthropogenic influences has actually shifted a lot around the climate, greenhouse gas cycle. And it's important for us to begin to think as to how to mitigate, emissions of greenhouse gases, which mostly trap hot air around the Earth atmosphere and causes warming. So it's important for us to, decarbonize as the world, the world is working towards a net zero agenda to limit global average temperature to 1.5 degrees centigrade, pre-industrial period. Now, what this means for Nigeria, even though it's established that Africa has contributed very little to the global emission profile, yet Africa, and of course Nigeria as a country in Africa, will be one of the recipients of some of the worst impact of climate change. And this is where, we must begin to look at how Nigeria can position itself to, manage concerns around climate change. So another key driver is also around development planning, our physical infrastructure. So there's a concept of the urban heat island, in a situation where you have, paved surfaces lying around, in different places. You have paved surfaces on road, interlocks, so many physical spaces that are made with concrete. Now, these concreted surfaces, when rays of sunlight hit these surfaces, it bounces back in sort of a solar reflectant that bounces back the heat and which spread across the atmosphere. So you have surfaces that don't necessarily absorb heat. And because they don't absorb the heat, the heat bounces off their surface, then it spread across, and this is one of the contributions to, you know, the urban heat island and of course heat wave that is experienced. So two key drivers are, you know, one, there's a natural cycle which is being also stretched by human activities because we're pumping more greenhouse gases to the atmosphere. Then the second part is our development planning, the physical infrastructure. And part of that include even whether in urban areas or rural areas, how we manage natural vegetation. When we remove a whole lot of trees, deforestation, which should help cool down, you know, the heat in the urban area or even in rural area, when we remove a lot of trees, then we can expect that there will be so much heat around. So these are, you know, are some of the key drivers behind the current heat wave in Nigeria.
Thank you so much for that response. I think you already tackled one of the questions I wanted to ask, which was, you know, how climate change contributes to the frequency and the intensity of heat waves. I think you've addressed that very effectively. I think the next thing would be, you know, the health ramifications. What are some of the immediate health risks associated with like prolonged exposure to extreme heat as we've been experiencing?
Right. Thank you for that question. It's important to say that when we look at heat wave, there are typically four key indicators that are often used to characterize heat wave. And one is frequency. So you're looking at the number of heat waves that occur every year. Then you have duration, that the length of each individual heat wave in days. Then you have season length, the number of days between the first heat wave of the year and the last one. Then finally, you have intensity, how hot it is during the heat wave. Now, all of these key indicators often play significant role on the health impact on population, not just even on human population, for even wider, you know, population in the ecosystem. You know, it's been alluded that in China, for example, the experience of the heat wave last year is a rarity that is expected to occur once in 250 years. However, it's been seen that over the years, even in the US, there's been climbing temperature with very serious health impact. You know, some of the key health impact has been even described by the World Health Organization is that anyone can suffer from heat stress, regardless of age, sex, or health status. Particularly people who are older and children, and of course people with certain underlying health conditions have, you know, greater exposure to some of these health-related illnesses. In the US, for example, there have been over 25,000 heat wave-related hospitalizations. And you have example of common health concern around heat cramps, mild heat edema, which, you know, results in swelling in the legs and hand, then heat syncope, which involves fainting, heat stroke, you know, so many of these health-related concerns. And you have a lot of people and part of the health concern that come from the heat wave because of the interconnectedness of various events. For example, if people are experiencing, you know, very intense heat wave, we tend to go for cooling. When we go for cooling, we put on our AC. Now, when we put on our AC, what's the source of electricity powering the AC? If the source of electricity powering that AC is from fossil fuel, it means we are burning additional fossil fuel, which will increase particulate in the atmosphere. Now, that increase in particulate in the atmosphere continues to worsen the airshed. And with that pollution, it affects a lot of people in terms of their respiratory functions as well as cardiovascular functions. So you have a lot of people having respiratory diseases, even, you know, worsening cardiovascular situation. So, you know, over time, you begin to see that more people collapse, right? Particularly people who are older or even small children. Even small children can even begin to have dermal issues where their skins become red or they begin to scratch itchy skins, making them highly uncomfortable. Now, for women that are nursing children, and particularly for those who have more than one children and they are still very small, it even can lead to a lot around, you know, mental imbalance in terms of their mental well-being, because they will have to deal with multiple cries and attending to babies. And part of it would even include spending more, because cost of cooling increases significantly. People may now have to buy powder to, you know, put on surfaces or buy cream. In households where they don't have such money to buy these, you know, ointment or powder to sort of alleviate the pain of children, then it even becomes worrisome, as people can relapse into, you know, hypertension or even terrible mental situations. So you have, you know, this heat wave having a whole lot of serious health impact on people. In fact, a lot of people would not even be able to concentrate and deliver work productively. And this also can result to a whole lot of other challenges, in terms of health. So there have been a lot of health related, you know, challenges relating to heat wave that are even often unnoticed by medical practitioners, because it is, some of these diagnoses will happen after the fact. But acute heat illnesses exist, and it affects a lot of people. In fact, in the US, it's been estimated that extreme heat causes more death than any other weather-related hazard. That is, comparing extreme heat with hurricanes, tornadoes, flooding, they noted that over 65,000 Americans, and this is according to the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions, a US-based institution, that more than 65,000 Americans visit emergency room each summer for acute illnesses. Now, this tells us something, that over 65,000 people in America, now compared to Nigeria, and this is a place where you tend to see that perhaps they have better health, you know, care facilities, now compared to in a situation where we don't have, you know, adequate health infrastructure, particularly in certain regions in the north where local temperature is even already typically high. Now, with, you know, climate change impact, increase in heat occurs, then it therefore means that, you know, a whole lot of people will die as a result of heat. Then there is also the impact where, with the high impact of heat, it means food spoilage will happen quickly, which will affect nutrition of people, because some people may not be able to afford alternative food and therefore would not care to eat, because with increasing heat, microorganisms can thrive even better, right? Quick deterioration of food. Now, some people will rather eat that food that is deteriorating than go hungry, which will also affect their health. So the heat wave can have very serious health impact on people, and we've seen examples across other countries.
Thank you so much for that. It's important to know these risks, but I think what's even more important is to try and, you know, figure out some strategies to stay cool. So for you, for everyone, what would you advise would be some effective strategies to stay cool and hydrated during a heat wave, especially in areas with limited access to resources like AC and so on? What would you advise would be the best ways to stay cool?
Well, I think nature is the best teacher. So, and this is where we must rethink our approach to our urban architecture, right? Very important for us to encourage a whole lot of people to improve, you know, tree planting. So where people don't have access to electricity, in fact, the nature-based solution is perfect, because it ultimately reduces the additional burden we put, on the environment by trying to cool down. If you go under a tree, naturally, the evapotranspiration process that happens under a tree, that is where sunlight draws water from the tree and causes, you know, coolness. You know, there's always a microclimate, a sort of a smaller climate region, you know, underneath a tree, and which is why for many people, if you are going into a place where there are trees, many people will prefer to park their cars under the trees because it's cooler under the tree than outside the tree. So as much as people can get into places, maybe there are parks, public parks that have trees, people can relax under the trees rather than, you know, putting on, because some people would rather go into their car, turn on the AC. Your car is burning, the exhaust that is coming out is going to further pollute the air. They're also releasing additional greenhouse gas to the atmosphere, which will continue to warm the atmosphere, and therefore we're not even solving the problem. So which is why nature-based solution is important. For people who are involved in heavy lifting, heavy work, and they must work outdoor, then it means that they should provide adequate, you know, water to hydrate themselves and put in very good amount of break in between their work regime so that they don't collapse or they are not, you know, intense heat does not affect them, their health. If you don't really have anything to do outside, it's best to, you know, stay indoor. And while you are indoor, you can choose the kind of clothing that you wear, clothing that will not trap a whole lot of heat. For example, you can choose to wear white clothing or light clothing. Don't wear anything that is black. You know, you have to wear something that can reflect sunlight, not something that will trap sunlight. So black traps it, white reflects it, right? And therefore, you stay cooler when you wear something lighter in terms of the texture of the material of the cloth and the color as well. So we can choose to wear color. Then again, while indoor, as much as possible, we should try to, you know, open our windows. And of course, care must be taken where people don't have necessary resources to prevent mosquitoes from going into their houses. But importantly, I'll try to allow, you know, indoor ventilation to allow, you know, very cool air to go in and out of the house. And that way you reduce the heat trapping in the house. And sometimes, again, this is very important as to how we keep our homes. And this has to do with sometimes we stuff in a lot of materials, unused cartons, you know, several materials or things that we don't really have any need for. The more item you have, because surfaces will always absorb or retain it or reflect them, the more unused materials or used resources that you have in the house, the more heat that is trapped in the house. So when you don't have any need for certain resources or certain materials, please let them out, because we give more space for free flow of air, because this is very important. And for those who are living in coastal environment, generally the coastal areas provide you with cool breeze to cool, you know, your body, and therefore you may not necessarily have to resort to. So take a walk out, you know, to nature. Go to the parks, you know, and those that are living close to forest areas, you can have resting places, you know, and, you know, under a tree in your compound, if that is how your own house is designed, find green areas, green spot to relax, and you will feel that the shade will sort of cool the temperature in this area, and you will enjoy yourself better than burning additional fossil fuel to stay cool, which can also have debilitating health impact to everyone around.
Thank you very much. I think that was very educational, even for me. So we've seen what people can do to stay cool as individuals in their home. I think the next question is, you know, government-wise, what policies or initiatives have been successful in other countries in addressing heat waves and climate change?
Interestingly, many governments, you know, in different parts of the world are drawing up various strategies. In fact, some governments in the US, for example, they are beginning to name the different kind of heat waves that they experience alphabetically, you know, to sort of signify the intensity, the frequency, the duration, you know, of the heat wave and the impact that it has, so as to continue to raise awareness within the society and amongst relevant stakeholders in taking necessary actions. Some have come up with, for example, some have come up with designing resilience strategies, right? So some have commissioned certain heat management study, right? So you commission academics or relevant experts to conduct an heat management study. So they're going to look at urban areas, peri-urban areas, and study the urban heat issues in these areas, and then come up with relevant strategies. Because sometimes the architecture of our urban areas, urban settlements, our planning will inform specific strategies that will need to be applied. For example, the United States Environmental Protection Agency has this guidebook. They call it Excessive Heat Event Guidebook. So this is something that a government in Nigeria, whether at the national or subnational level, can also key into, and maybe something like this can be championed by the likes of NIMET, or even the Federal Ministry of Environment, Ministry of Health. All of these entities can work together to produce this kind of guidebook that provide guidance to everyone across the country. In fact, this Excessive Heat Events Guidebook produced by the US EPA was first produced in June 2006. And that's how many years ago? About 18 years ago. So to tell you that heat event is not something that is just happening now, it's been around for a while, and it's the increase in temperature is very, very prominent. Now, they recently updated this guidebook in 2016, and that tells you that, you know, this is a real challenge. That's why they are paying a lot of attention to it. You also have the Center for Climate and Energy Solutions in the US. They produce resilience strategies for extreme heat. That's another document in 2017, talking about some of the strategies that countries can take. This was more particularly focused on their US state, anyways. But it can apply to any country that adapt it for their own. Their own research revealed that they've estimated that by 2100, heat wave would have cost at least 1.8 billion labor hours lost due to extreme heat, and which they have, evaluated to be something around about $170 billion in wages that will be lost due to loss of productivity. I'm not sure whether we've had any such research that looks into this loss of productivity as a result of heat wave, whether in Africa or Nigeria specifically. And this is something the government needs to pay attention to. Another key step that some other countries have taken is they've developed what they call climate mapping for resilience and adaptation portal, which is a sort of information portal that allows people to get real-time and updated information about some of the key climate risks that are facing the country. So this can even be devolved to state level, so that each state also has a climate change related portal, because some of the impact are general, some impact are also location specific. So if every state can come up with this kind of portal to guide, or maybe a central portal that has link to every state portal, then everyone in each state can get guidance as to what they need to do. Some of the key information around strategies for coping will also be on this portal, and it allows people to plan for events such as drought, because heat wave, when it is prolonged, effectively leads to drought. When it leads to drought, it affects agricultural yield, When it affects agricultural yield, it means we'll have food insecurity. With food insecurity, you have malnutrition, which will have health impact and a whole lot of other, you know, socioeconomic challenges. Others involved, you know, encouraging, you know, afforestation, reforestation, tree planting, and of course, ensuring that you can begin to decarbonize, right? Because as we emit more greenhouse gas emissions, right, then it means we'll still continue to exacerbate this current situation. And this is why a lot of countries are looking at energy efficiency measures, right? You know, looking at renewable energy options that help to decarbonize, to reduce further emission to the atmosphere. So these are some of the steps that some countries have already been taking to combat, you know, these challenges. And, you know, more importantly, Nigeria needs to our policy and climate change policy, as well as our national policy on environment, already captured, you know, concept around nature-based solution. I think a lot that we need to now start doing is to deliberately ensure that we implement these policies. You know, you have states, you know, like Calabar, you know, Cross River State. You have the likes of Lagos State. You like of your state, building more parks. You know, with parks where trees are lined, people can go to cool themselves. You know, during heat wave. And more people should also, government should also ensure that there are policies in place to prevent indiscriminate cut down of trees, you know, because this will contribute to lowering urban heat island concern. You have, you know, some government already considering urban forestry, right? Urban forestry concept, you know, allows, you know, proliferation of trees that then improves, reduce urban heat island and improves also, you know, reduce heat wave intensity in any locale. And this is something that the government needs to pay additional attention to as part of our nature-based nature-based solution, which obviously will contribute to our long-term objective of net zero emission.
Thank you so much. So, I mean, now we've discussed what individuals can do. We've talked about, you know, what governments in other countries can do and potentially what Nigerian government can do. I think now is to try and sort of synergize both ideas, right? And just think of how can individuals and communities contribute to reducing greenhouse gas emissions and combat climate change? How do you think that can be, you know, feasible for individuals and communities to, you know, reduce greenhouse gas emissions?
Yes, interestingly, I think already a lot of people are doing, you know, very well in terms of promoting activities that will help combat climate change in terms of adaptation. But what we need more is in terms of scale up of these interventions. So part of some of the ways people are combating it is, you know, in urban design, as we look to, so the government is already planning to build social housing, affordable housing. Now, this is a place where the government can take active step to ensure that the kind of roofing they put on these houses can, you know, are what they call green roofs or cool roofs that helps to reduce heat sensitivity. So while government is, you know, and this is why even at the private sector level, you have the likes of the IFC EDGE certification helping to promote green building, right? The green building concept helps to also manage energy consumption. Part of it is to also lower, you know, heat trapping in the building. So the government, as it looks to build out a lot of social housing or affordable housing, it's important for the government to also encourage, you know, by also, you know, leading the way to put green roofs, cool roof, to ensure that people, you know, that are going to inhabit those structures will not be exposed or vulnerable to intense heat. And what this means is also that it also lowers cost of maintenance of building. So the choice of materials for building should also include consideration for, you know, lowering heat trapping in building, and this is very important. So, and that's at the government level. Individually, when people are choosing to build, they should also factor these into their design into their cost estimate to ensure that build houses with materials. So the choice of materials, that would not, take a whole lot of, embody a whole lot of heat, will go a long way, of course, in reducing vulnerability to heat wave, as well as reducing cost of maintaining or even cost of cooling or maintaining the property in the long term. Then another key important consideration is in the design of road and paved surfaces. So our government needs to start thinking, and this is where, people that are studying, aspects relating to materials need to bring their A game to the fore, where the whole activities, the whole activities of people in the building and the construction will be geared towards reducing urban heat island. That is, paved surfaces should be designed with materials that can allow absorption of heat in a way that will reduce the overall heat content in the environment. Even paved surfaces, and this is where the concept of green roads come to play, because with this heat, it can quickly affect, it can cause deterioration of infrastructure, particularly road and paved surfaces. So the design of this infrastructure needs to take consideration of how to manage this. And generally for people, I think it's to adopt more sustainable lifestyle as much as possible. Let's, adopt nature-based solutions, and which means, can we plant more trees? If you're building a house, part of the concerns in building the house is, can you have a tree within the compound, within the house? Can you have, a garden that allows for cooling? So build some kind of greenery. And this is what some countries are already doing. Atop some buildings, there are, lounge areas where people go to cool and relax, all covered in greens. So urban gardening, urban forestry. In fact, some people are calling it social forestry, in a manner that begins to attract people to use this outdoor environment in a way that adds value to both the environment as well as to people's social well-being. So everyone has a role to play, and we all should ensure we decarbonize and curtail our consumption of fossil fuel, adopt more renewables, and this is the only way for us to lower emissions.
Thank you. I agree with everything you've said. I think so the next thing is to get other people to agree with it, which is basically public opinion on this issue, because I think in Nigeria it's a bit the idea of green gas emission is not as popular as a lot of things. So how do you think we can improve on the public's understanding and awareness of the links between heat wave, climate change and human activities?
It's interesting that there are still, climate skeptics, right? There are climate skeptics, but all in all, it's really clear that there's a pattern in terms of what we are experiencing regarding extreme weather events, and this especially calls for rethinking that paradigm that there is a lot of works about climate change, in terms of building greater awareness and building momentum for action amongst the wider stakeholders, I think the first step is to improve advocacy, enlighten people more. So, for example, some of the strategies would be to use our various media platform, whether it's social media or whether it's the traditional media via radio, local languages, advise people, talk to people about climate change in local languages, whether it's, the three main languages, Hausa, Igbo, Yoruba, and of course, the fourth one, Pidgin, where we can educate people more about the concept of climate change, the impact of climate change, and how people should respond to these, already manifesting challenges around the world. Now, it's an uphill task in convincing a lot of people, and this is where we need, experts in climate change to come together with people, sociologists, linguists, to look at the framing of this message so that it will have, you know, the right impact when it is directed to different categories of audience. Because the way you will address different kind of audience targeting is very important. And this is why when you will look at the assessment report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, you will see that they typically will produce two kind of report. One is the summary for policymakers, and then there's the general report for the general people to read, as well as for the scientific community. Now, you will see that the targeting of the policymaker is more abridged, direct, and tend to speak about economic impact and then, you know, the reason for taking action. So the same way, if you are designing advocacy intervention, we need to apply this audience targeting, ensuring that we understand the categories of audience. Because amongst the people that we'll be talking to are people who are not literate, all right? So how do we frame this climate change issue, in a way that they will understand? There are also people who are skeptics. How do we make sure we provide relevant data, evidence, to support whatever assertion that we are tabling to them? There are people who do not necessarily care, but, you know, with the right amount of nudging, and then they will begin to see reason why they need to make certain shifts in their own lifestyles to ensure that everyone plays his or her role in this, climate change action, whether it is mitigation or adaptation. But more importantly, the private sector can also play a very critical role. The private sector can play a critical role in ensuring that allocation of investment, finance, goes towards a project that contributes to both mitigation and adaptation. Now, we must understand that some of the justification for this allocation of resources may not come in terms of immediate gains, but a longer term perspective is very critical to ensuring that everyone achieves there's resilience across three levels. Resilience in terms of the environment, resilience for business, and resilience for the society. If any of these resilience is missing, everybody is going to be in a bad shape. And this is why it's important that both the public sector, the private sector, and the general public, society as large, come together to work in concert to ensure that we can combat climate change head on. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Mr. Abaje. I think for me, this has been a very educational topic. Especially in the times that we're in. So I'd like to thank you for taking the time to come and speak to us today. So I would also like to thank everybody for joining us on the on this episode of the NESG Radio. To listen to other episodes, please visit nestgroup.org/podcast. Thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Abaje. All right.
Thank you so much for having me.